CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. December 6th marks the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women in Canada. The Quebec Women's Federation is using this time to raise awareness about cyber violence. The day December 6th is the anniversary of the Montreal Massacre, when a gunman entered the Polytechnic School in Montreal and murdered 14 women in an act now understood to be misogynistic terrorism. The tragedy is 35 years old this year. The Quebec Women's Federation is an advocacy group active since 1966, aiming to build an equal and inclusive society through various campaigns. Here is their awareness and mobilization lead, Marina Mathieu, discussing the anniversary of the attack.
We believe that 35 years ago, something horrendous happened, and we ought to remember and never forget that, yes, this individual was isolated. Yes, this individual committed a crime. But today, so many individuals are isolated, and so many individuals believe that committing these type of crimes is one of the solutions. And we need to make sure to remind them every year that this is not okay.
For the last 15 years, the Quebec Women's Federation has run a campaign around the time of the anniversary.
On December 6th, what we see and plan is a moment of pause, respect after 35 years, but also a moment to gather, to act, to feed in community, and realize that you're not alone going through whatever type of sorrow or distress you might feel.
This year, the Federation's campaign is focusing on cyber violence against women. Since 2019, reported hate crimes increased nationally by 72%, according to a study from Statistics Canada last year. Studies by the Quebec Women's Federation and the Women's Federation of Canada say this increase is driven in large part by increased hate online towards women and girls. Here is Mathieu again defining cyber violence.
One thing, but why is it that we're focusing on gender-based cyber violence? Because women and people from 2SLGBTQIA plus communities are facing way more cyber violence than the rest of the population. So cyber violence is habits, ways, behaviors online that aim to harass or persecute a group of people or certain people through either violence, intimidation, or harassment in general. So this is how I would describe it.
The campaign aims to raise public awareness around cyber violence, but also advocate for stronger protection for people on social media platforms.
Each individual has power because they do have platforms. They're alive on these platforms, no matter if it is Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, name it. The fact that we are silent sometimes when we see this type of cyber violence occur, we're playing a role in making and letting it happen. Also, I invite people to keep these platforms accountable. They're not centering safety. Why is that? I think that as individuals who participate and who partake in activities on these platforms, we should, each and every one of us, be advocates in order for these platforms to respect our safety, to make sure that they put safeguards in place in order to protect us. And I guess as somebody who does identify as a queer person, as a Black woman, as a woman, I want to say to people, be careful what you say online. Be careful what you intend to say and then finally say, because it does impact and stays there.
For CJLO News and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Coming. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show on CGLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well. Hope everyone had an awesome weekend. And if this is your first time listening, welcome to Tommy John Show, where we cover everything going on in the world of sports. What a week we had, especially what a weekend we had. College football concluding. We have the 12-team bracket set. We will get into that on the show. Unbelievable games in the NFL yesterday with more division titles locking up and the playoff picture becoming clear. And end of an era in Formula One with Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes. We'll get into all of it here over the next hour on the Tommy John Show. Remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Do it all. The Tommy John Show. We're on all social platforms, social media platforms. But really appreciate you guys for listening. And if you missed the show, check out Instagram after I post the full episodes on Instagram without the ads as well. So if you missed the show 1 to 2, head to the Tommy John Show on Instagram and you will not miss a thing. So why don't we start off like we always do, a quick recap of the past week, and we might as well start off with college football just because it was the main storyline. We had the conference championship games this weekend. We had the AAC championship, the MAC title, the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and those coveted byes on the line. In years past, these games probably don't mean much. Now, if you win your conference and you're ranked as one of the top five conference champions, you're automatically in the playoff, and four of those five teams get a bye. So these conference championship games are they're so important. And in years past, we've had conference championship games. Didn't really matter. The amount of times where a Florida State last year, where they have a huge issue, well, we got left out of the playoff. We won the ACC and undefeated. They would make the playoff this year. Now, if you just win your conference, you're one of the four Power Four conferences, you win your conference, even though you're down and out, you can still make the playoff. And we have a perfect example with that in the ACC championship. We'll start off there. Clemson on a 56-yard field goal at the end. They had a 24-7 lead at the half. SMU comes all the way back, ties it with a few seconds left. They get in field goal range, Clemson, to kick the game-winning field goal from 56 yards, and they are headed to the college football playoff. A team a week ago that lost to South Carolina at home, they lost to Louisville this year, lost to Georgia. There's no way in hell Clemson should be in the playoff, but you win your conference, you get in. And that's exactly what happened to the Clemson Tigers. A huge win for them. Cade Klubnik, man, he 4 touchdown passes. He's been a phenomenal quarterback this year. Had a bad start against Georgia. Not a great game against Louisville, but he's played pretty darn well the last few weeks. So shout out to Clemson and SMU squeaking. They absolutely squeak into that last wild card spot. They're 11-1. Lose that game. It was between them and Bama. They ultimately take SMU. Yet to the SEC, Georgia, 22-19 in overtime. They lost their starting quarterback, Carson Beck, on the last play of the first half. And they played much better after that. They started to run the ball really well. They had Gunnar Stockton coming off the bench. He was 12 of 16. He only threw 71 yards. But it was the Trevor Etienne show. He had 94 yards and 2 touchdowns. Quinn Ewers, man, something about it. Like, he throws for big numbers, but he's the weak link, I think, for Texas. It's going to be interesting to see now because Texas is now the 5 seed. They do not have a bye. They'll be hosting Clemson in the first round. They have another week. Do they install Arch Manning? What do they do? Because it feels like Quinn Ewers is not 100% right now. He is not playing too well. And he's one of the big reasons why Texas did not win that football game. Early on, it should have been 17-3, maybe even 21-3. They end up kicking field goals, and that changed. I mean, that was the difference. You go to overtime, you lose a close one. Georgia now 2-0 against Texas this year. Texas's only 2 losses are to the Georgia Bulldogs. Arizona State, a dominant performance. They win the Big 12 over Iowa State 45-19, and Arizona State gets the last bye. They are the 4 seed, And this running back, Cameron Scataboo, is unbelievable. 170 yards, two touchdowns for the Sun Devils on Saturday. The number one team in the country, the Oregon Ducks, win a fantastic football game, 45-37 over the Penn State Nittany Lions. They will have the number one seed in the tournament. Penn State fall to number six, but honestly, not a bad spot to be in. We'll get into that later in the show. But both Penn State and Oregon make the playoff. The Ducks will have a first round bye. Boise State on Friday night, 21-7 over the UNLV Rebels. What a performance by Ashton Gentry, 209 yards and a touchdown. Boise State, the number nine team in the country, they will get a bye as they are the third highest conference champion. And can you believe it if I were to tell you Boise State would have a bye in the playoff? Craziness. Absolute craziness. And in the mentioned Army, 35-14 over Tulane. Army now, they're ranked and they will host Navy next weekend, the only college football game next weekend, the Army-Navy game. But yeah, so you have Oregon getting a bye as winners of the Big Ten. You have Georgia getting a bye as the winner of the SEC. Boise State, the three seed. The Arizona State Sun Devils, the four seed, and that gives us our huge matchups. You have the five seed Texas hosting the ACC champ Clemson. You have Indiana, number 10, against number 7, Notre Dame. You have number 6, Penn State, against the 11 seed SMU. And what a game this is in Columbus, Ohio. The 8 seed Ohio State hosting the 9 seed, the Tennessee Volunteers. The only real maybe issue with everything was, does SMU deserve to go? Because their big wins Duke, but they did go 11-1 in a big conference. Or do you put in Alabama, who's 9-3, but has huge wins against Georgia, South Carolina? That was the huge issue. And here is Kirk Herbstreit of ESPN talking about if the committee made the right decision putting SMU in over Alabama. That was really the only conversation we had. Miami were 10-2. Maybe they're the outside pick, but they lost two of their last three. Lost to Georgia Tech on the road. Lost to Syracuse and Kyle McCord the last week of the year. That ultimately led to Clemson getting into the ACC championship. So it was between Alabama and SMU. Here was Kirk Herbstreit.
Coach was in a tough spot, and I think it had everything to do with what happened late in the year to Alabama. I think we all look at Alabama's resume. We applaud the effort and what they did against top 25 teams. But I think the loss to Vanderbilt and then, of course, the loss at Oklahoma ultimately had to do them in. Because if you put the resume side by side with SMU and Alabama and what they had to go through in the gauntlet in that SEC, it gives them an advantage. But they lost that game. And the way they lost that game had to matter. And I think I'm guessing that the committee had to look at that. And SMU was a team that was ahead of Alabama by, what, three spots last week going into this bonus round where Alabama didn't have to play that extra data point, and they lose on a last-second field goal after really doing a great job, Greg, of fighting back to get into the game. And the committee recognizes that and honors that, and so here we go. We got the field, some great matchups, first ever 12-team playoff, first round on college campuses. It's going to be wild.
So that was Kirk Herbstreit. You might recognize his voice. He does Thursday Night Football as well. But he's 100% right. That loss to Oklahoma was everything to Alabama. They were a two-loss team. They somehow found their way still in the playoff picture. Sorry if my voice is a bit growly there coming off a cold. But anyway, Alabama had all to play for against Oklahoma. This is not the Oklahoma team. There's no Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Caleb Williams. This was a terrible Oklahoma team. Terrible. Awful in the conference. They had awful losses all year long. They got blown out by Texas. I mean, the list goes on and on. This is a pathetic Oklahoma football team. They lose to Missouri, get blown out by LSU. Ole Miss beats them. They're just not a good football team. South Carolina drummed them. Tennessee beat them. Yet Alabama can't score a touchdown against Oklahoma. And it's not just that they lost. It's the way they lost. 24-3. Man, That killed Alabama. And the committee, trust me, they wanted Alabama in. And if SMU did not have that comeback, if they just got their doors blown off by Clemson, they probably get in. But they show tremendous fight. We're the much better team in the second half. Take Clemson to the brink, and it's basically a 57, 56-yard field goal that wins it for Clemson at the end. And it knocks Alabama pretty much, well, knock them out. Because SMU playing them close, 11-1, and I think the committee did not want to tarnish conference championship games. Because then a lot of people are like, why do we want to play in them? If we go, it's an extra game we lose and we get kicked out. So I respected the committee's decision. I really do. We'll get more into that after the break. We still have to jump around to the other sports. Quick recap of a hectic week 14 in the NFL. It started off with an unbelievable football game. The Dan Campbell's Lions going for it on fourth down like it's going out of style. 34-31 over the Packers. And that play call at the end with 40 seconds left. They're already in field goal range. And they decide to go for it. Jared Goff trips and somehow still hands it off to Montgomery. Get the first down. The Lions, 34-31, a big day for Jared Goff, 283, three touchdowns, and the Lions are 12-1 and are still leading the way in the NFC. Yesterday, we had a great game between the Steelers and the Browns. Russell Wilson continues to impress. Very efficient game, two touchdowns, above 70% completion. Above 60% completion. He was awesome. Najee Harris ran the ball well, and they are 10-3 now, Pittsburgh. 10-3, and they are in a great spot in the AFC North. But it all depends on Baltimore. They had a bye this week, and that's a huge stretch for the Steelers coming up. They got big games. They got Philadelphia. They got Baltimore. Believe they have Kansas City. They have a gauntlet coming up. The Steelers do, and it's going to be interesting how they play. But if their defense plays like that and Russell Wilson doesn't turn the ball over, gets his weapons involved, the Steelers are going to be a tough out for everyone. In a game no one really watched, the Saints 14-11 take down the New York Giants. A blocked field goal late saved the Saints from going to overtime, but who cares? I mean, the Giants stink, Saints stink. We can move on. Dolphins in overtime, 32-26 over the New York Jets. They are still alive in the AFC playoff picture. The Jacksonville Jaguars, 10-6 over the Tennessee Titans. What a performance from Sam Darnold. Five touchdown passes. Kirk Cousins was awful in his return. Another two picks, no touchdowns. And you got to think Michael Penix is going to come in now, right? They're 6-7. They've lost four in a row. They have to salvage the season. Michael Penix, top 10 pick. You like to think they're going to throw him out there, but what a day from Sam Darnold. He was 22-28, 347, five touchdowns, no turnovers. The Vikings are still within striking distance in the North. They are 10-2, one game back of Detroit. What a performance by the Seattle Seahawks. 30-18 on the road in Arizona, and now they have a comfortable lead in the NFC West. 8-5. The Rams at 7-6 and have the head-to-head, but they do play each other once more. The Rams, 44-42 over the Buffalo Bills in an unbelievable football game. Josh Allen, I just felt so sorry for him. He had six touchdowns, three throwing, three passing, no turnovers, over 400 yards of total offense, and the Bills still lose 44-42. Everyone will be talking about that weird decision by McDermott on first and goal. You QB sneak, you don't get it. Have to burn a timeout with a minute 20 left. Ugh, poor coaching at the end. But hey, credit the Rams. Matt Stafford was awesome. Puka Nacua, what a day for him. 162 yards on receiving, not to mention he got to rush the ball too, 5-16 and a touchdown. He was all over the field on Sunday afternoon. The Rams 7-6, still within striking distance of the Seattle Seahawks. The 49ers with a big win, 38-13 over Caleb Williams and the Bears. The Eagles squeak one out, 22-16 against the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers had a drive to win the game and a costly drop by Xavier Leggett cost them of pulling off the upset, but the Eagles improved to 11-2, leading the way in the NFC East. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers now control the NFC South with a 28-13 win over the Las Vegas Raiders. Baker Mayfield did have some costly turnovers, but they relied on Rashad White. He had a big day, 17 carries, 90 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. Also had two catches for 19 yards and a touchdown through the air. What a day for him. And the Buccaneers now at 7-6 lead the way in the NFC South. Wow, what a Sunday night game we had. It was all Chiefs in the first half. The Chargers couldn't get anything going. Then the Chargers score two unanswered touchdowns to take the lead in the third quarter. Then at the end, driving, Mahomes completes two third and longs to get in field goal range. And in the most Chief way possible, it's a doink off the upright and in for Kansas City. They win 19-17, clinch the AFC West once again. But man, how many close games are the Chiefs going to win? That is 15 or 16 one-score wins in a row for the Chiefs. Oh my God, they have not been impressive. They have not really blown anyone out, but they just keep on winning games. And they're 12-1, and credit to them, it's tough to win in this league. But, oh man, they're vulnerable for sure. We'll get into that later in the show, but the Chiefs are for sure vulnerable. Tonight we have one more game, Cincinnati at Dallas, the Simpsons game. I'll tune in. Let's see how Joe Burrow, they still think they have an outside chance, but this is it. They're still in the hunt, but this is it. They need Denver. They need the Chargers. They need Baltimore, to one of those teams that just crumble down the stretch, and they need to win out for them to have a shot. But it doesn't look good. But it starts tonight for the Bengals. They have to win out if they want any chance of making the postseason. Quickly over to the NHL, and we have huge news in the standings front. The Winnipeg Jets are plummeting a bit. They're 4-6 in their last 10. For the hottest team in the league, were 15-1 to start the year. They're now 20-9. A bad loss over the weekend to the Columbus Blue Jackets, 4-1. And I'm not hitting the panic button. They're still tied for first in the division, but they've cooled off a ton. And Minnesota right now, with two games in hand, are tied with the Jets at the top of the Central. Dallas in third. Colorado's won two in a row, sit in fourth in the Central. You head to the Pacific. The Vegas Golden Knights have won three in a row. They lead the way in the Pacific. The LA Kings might be the hottest team in hockey. They've won five in a row. They are second in the Pacific. The Canucks in third. The Oilers, two in a row. McDavid and Draisaitl are starting to heat up. They were sensational on Thursday night. McDavid had 4 points. And they were pretty darn good over the weekend as well. Edmonton, you just knew it would happen. They just buy their time. They always get off the slow starts. And then once you hit American Thanksgiving, December, they usually pick it up. And it's no different this year. The Oilers are right in that wild card picture. They're tied right now for third with Vancouver. They're going to be fine. They'll make the playoffs for sure. You head to the Eastern Conference. The Florida Panthers have won two in a row. They lead the way in the Atlantic. The Leafs have lost two in a row, surprisingly, over the weekend to Pittsburgh and to Washington. Not too concerning. The Atlantic, it's kind of all over the map. But they need to watch out for the Boston Bruins, who have won four in a row and are 7-3 in their last 10. The coaching change from Montgomery to Sacco has clearly done wonders. I know their schedule hasn't been the hardest. They've played Montreal, Detroit, Chicago, Philly. But they got a big test tomorrow night at Winnipeg. And then they got Seattle, Vancouver, Edmonton. This is a big stretch for the Bruins. If they want to prove that they're back to their winning ways, they need to beat quality teams. Four in a row is great, but Montreal, Chicago, Detroit, they're not great teams, and it's going to be important to beat some good teams down the stretch because we know how good the Bruins are on paper, and we know they can beat the bottom feeders. It's just, where are they? Okay, you've won four in a row, seven of your last 10. How are you when you play a Florida? How are you when you play a Washington? How are you when you play a Winnipeg? That's going to be the real important question. You head to the Metropolitan Division. It's still the Washington Capitals leading the way. New Jersey in second. Carolina in third. Quickly to the NBA, and It's still the Cleveland Cavaliers atop of the Eastern Conference with a 1.5 game lead over the Celtics. The Orlando Magic continue to win ball games, and man, this Wagner kid is unbelievable for Orlando. He's doing just crazy things, helping them win ball games down in Orlando. Everyone thought when Paolo Banchero went out, they'll kind of drop down to the rest of the pack in the Eastern Conference, but they've done more than that. This is a pretty darn good basketball team. No one really, they had a decent year last year, made the postseason, but man, this Wagner kid, Franz Wagner, I know he's injured right now, but on that that 10-game stretch he was on was incredible, and they just keep winning ball games. So credit to the Orlando Magic. The New York Knicks sitting fourth, Miami in fifth. The Milwaukee Bucks now finally above 500 at 12-11. You go to the Western Conference, Oklahoma City Thunder lead the way. Memphis in second. The Houston Rockets, the surprise of the NBA, third in the West. Dallas and Golden State round up the top five. The Lakers finally got a big win over the weekend. They were on a huge skid. They're still 3-7 in their last 10, but they needed a win over the weekend, and they got one in the worst way. They needed it, and they got it. The Formula One season wrapped up on Sunday morning, Saturday night, our time, and Lando Norris secured the win, and McLaren, their first Constructors' Championship in, what, over 20 years? Big win for Lando Norris and McLaren. Verstappen, the world champion, finished in sixth, and Lewis Hamilton had finished fourth in his final race for Mercedes. He will join Ferrari starting next year. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about that hectic college football playoff and what I expect from the playoff and how vulnerable are the Chiefs, and also should Michael Penix start in place of Kirk Cousins. I am Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Concordia Relay for Life is inviting you to an extravagant soiree this January 19th at 6 p.m. on the 9th floor of the JMSB building. The gala will showcase a diverse array of artwork from around the Concordia community, artist talks, and a look into fundraising for cancer research on campus. All proceeds will go to the Canadian Cancer Society, so bring your friends, dress to impress, and support a good cause during this elegant evening of culture and community. For more details, find us at Concordia Relay on Instagram or Facebook.
Listen to Madonna Talk on CJLO 1690 AM, Saturdays 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., hosted by Kamala Madantalk-Wright, an introduction to revolutionary reggae consciousness and the Caribbean indigenous community. Maroons, Caramanti, Kumina, Caribs, Taino, and Rastafarian culture, issues affecting the BIPOC community.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. Sorry if my voice sounds a bit off. I've been battling a cold last few weeks, but we still want to do the show, obviously. That's not a good excuse, but we just have to talk about this college football playoff. It's the first time ever we have the 12-team March Madness-esque style format in college football. And are there some problems with it? Absolutely. It's the first year. Like, the non-reseeding thing is ridiculous because we have matchups that make no sense whatsoever following the first round. And yes, when you have these conferences, which aren't equal, the SEC and the Big Ten are far better than the Mountain West, the Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma now, the depleted ACC. Those are the two best conferences. So you have each other beat up on each other throughout the year. Fair enough. But then you're ranked. And there those, and trust me, those two conferences will always have the number one and number two teams in this new playoff format. They will always be the one and two seeds. And as a result, you should probably have the most favorable draw. In the National Football League, the number one seed in the AFC and NFC play the worst remaining team left in the postseason. Makes sense. You played the whole year. You had the best record. You get a bye. And since you were the best team, not only do you get a bye, you get to play the worst team left in the playoff. It's called reseeding. In this format, and I don't know why, I don't know who thought it'd be a great idea, maybe because March Madness is such a success, people can do their brackets and want to fill it out. It's not 64 teams, guys. It's 12. It's 12 teams. There's no reseeding. None. And as a Notre Dame guy, I like that we're on the bottom half of the bracket because we do play Indiana. And I give Indiana much more credit than a lot of people. The national pundits, all these people talk about college football, don't like Indiana. And fair enough, they had an easy schedule. And the one time they played a team with a pulse, they got their doors blown off. Fair enough. But I still think Indiana's a good football team. I do. I think they're well coached. I like the Canadian quarterback, Rourke. I think they're very good. Having said that, the bracket's built in. So if Notre Dame wins that game, they play Georgia. And if Georgia, I know who won the SEC, who haven't been the most impressive, barely beat Georgia Tech, got blown out by Ole Miss, almost lost to Florida. They're not a great team. They're a very good team, and they're probably my pick to make it out of that section. But still, if Notre Dame get through that game, they get SMU, Penn State, or Boise. That's like their section. It's Indiana, Notre Dame, SMU, Penn State, and the two teams with the byes in that section are Boise State and Georgia. Now look at the other top corner. The number one seed, Oregon, the only undefeated team. They beat Ohio State. They beat Penn State over the weekend. They are, without question, the best team right now, have the best resume in college football. They're the one seed. Also, the four seed in that section is Arizona State, who may be the hottest team in college football. Look what they did to Iowa State over the weekend. They beat BYU. They're hammering everyone. That Scataboo kid at running back is incredible. Great O-line. Love what the coach is doing. They're the hottest team right now, maybe in college football. They're on that side of the bracket. You have Texas, Clemson on that side of the bracket. And think about this. Ohio State and Tennessee, the 8-9. The winner of Ohio State-Tennessee get to play Oregon on a neutral field. And that's okay, fair enough. But poor Oregon. Oregon are the number one team in the country, beat everyone, winners of the Big Ten, number one team in the country, number one seed. They should play the worst remaining team left. And I don't like Oregon. I don't mind Oregon, but I'm not rooting for Oregon. But I think it's BS. They get to play in the quarterfinals on a neutral field, Ohio State, who they beat by 1 point at home, or Tennessee, who beat Alabama, who played Georgia tough, one of the best defenses in college football, a very dangerous team. That's who they get. That makes no sense. But when you think about Penn State, who played Oregon over the weekend, who lost to Oregon, who lost to Ohio State, they play SMU. If they win that, they get Boise State. Think about that. Oregon beat them. Ohio State beat them. Who's their big win? Illinois? Minnesota, Wisconsin. They do not have a good win, Penn State. They do not. The two good teams they played this year, they lost. And what was their reward by the committee? You get SMU at home, then Boise State to make the Final Four. How does that make any sense? How do they have an easier path than Oregon? Or how do they have an easier path than Ohio State? Ohio State went into Happy Valley, went into Beaver Stadium, and beat Penn State. And I'm not a Ryan Day, Ohio State guy, but that happened. And they have the easiest draw. Texas, who hasn't beat anyone, and the only good team they played pretty much all year. You can say Texas A&M, but the really good team they played this year was Georgia at home. They got their doors blown off. Then they played them again this weekend, SEC championship game, and lost. They're the 5 seed. And they get Clemson and Arizona State to make the 4. Oregon gets Ohio State or Tennessee. That makes no sense whatsoever. It makes no sense. And I know they wanted to make it, like I said, maybe a March Madness style. People can fill out the bracket. You can see it out. They need reseeding. And I hope next year they address this problem. Because if you're the number one team in the country and you've had the best regular season, you win your conference, you're undefeated, you need to get something out of it. Let them play the worst team available. If SMU somehow beats Penn State, they're the 11, play SMU. If Clemson somehow beats Texas, they're the 12 seed, let them play Oregon. If Indiana upsets Notre Dame and they're the lowest team left, let them play Oregon. Oregon has the toughest road to the national championship. Think about it. They would have to play the winner of Tennessee, Ohio State. Then, if they win that game on a neutral field, they're in the Final Four. Who will they get in the Final Four? Probably Texas or Arizona State. But probably Texas. They're probably going to have to go to win a national championship. Tennessee or Ohio State. Texas. Whoever's in the national championship game, whether it be Georgia, Notre Dame, Penn State. I don't think it'll be Penn State, but Penn State. That's brutal. But Tommy, they got to buy. I don't care. If you're the number one team in the country, you need to get some sort of advantage over everyone else. Same goes with Georgia. Georgia should play the second best team, the second worst team left. Like the NFL, the fact that Penn State might moonwalk to the Final Four when they lost to Ohio State and they lost to Oregon, they fail upwards for some reason. They lose and get better off. I've never seen that in my life. Penn State lose and they're better because of it. Texas lose and they're better because of it. And Georgia and Oregon, who won their conferences, are getting you know what. It's crazy. That is the one flaw I have with it. I love that there's 12 teams. I love that conference championships mean something because they went away. No one cared about conference championships. No one. Love that means something. And I love that even if you're down and out, and you're in a top four conference, that you can still win it like a Clemson and get in. I love that. But the flaw with it is these stupid non-seeding. The NFL realized it was a problem, and now college football. I know it's the first year, but it makes no sense. You have a definitive number one team in the country, and they have the toughest road to the national championship. That makes zero sense. How does Penn State have the easiest path to the college football semifinal? How? How? SMU, and if they win that, Boise State? It makes zero sense. And Oregon's going to get Tennessee or Ohio State. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Now, the other big conversation, like we mentioned earlier, was SMU getting in over Alabama. And I don't want to hear, Alabama's a better football team. If they played on a neutral field, I'll pick Alabama. Alabama probably be at least a touchdown, maybe a 10-point favorite in that football game. I'd love to see Vegas make a hypothetical line for that game, just so we know. But it'd be over 7 points. But that is irrelevant. SMU went 11-1, and I know their only good win's Duke. They lost to BYU, then they lose to Clemson. But still, playing the extra game shouldn't hurt you. It really shouldn't. You make your conference championship game, it's a bonus. Now, I'm not saying you should be hintless. I'm not saying you don't make, like, you can change the seeding, but I'm saying you should not be kicked out of the college football playoff for losing an extra game, which is a bonus game, is my opinion. I have no problem. Like, Penn State fell a bit. Texas didn't really fall. They just moved, switched spots. But I'm saying you can move them around based on that loss. But you shouldn't kick them out of the playoff. If they're firmly in the playoff before the conference championship games, then you should stay, in my opinion. So SMU, to think that if they got their doors blown off, they're going to put Alabama in, is alarming. I want to know if SMU did not fight back and force Clemson to kick a 56-yard field goal at the buzzer to win, if they were just continued to play like they did in the first half, lose 38-10, 42-14, do they make the playoff? I don't think so. I really don't. That might have been the most important half SMU ever plays. They were down and out. They tie the game, a great comeback. Everyone, and then when they lose on a 56-yard field goal at the end of regulation, everyone felt bad for them, I feel like. They fought back. They were down and out. They finally forced the tie, and they lose on a 56-yard field goal, and they might miss the playoff because of it. The committee wasn't going to let that happen. They couldn't do it. And also, they caught flack last year by putting Alabama in over Florida State. I would have done the same thing, but they've been saying, Alabama, they just love Alabama. They'll do anything for Alabama. SMU lost in heartbreaking fashion. The committee said, you know what? We have to put them in. We have to. And I think they deserve to go in. If you're 11-1 and you lose your conference championship game on basically pretty much a 60-yard field goal in college, then I think you deserve to go. I do. But I keep thinking to myself, what if they didn't play well in the second half? What if they came out flat? I think they put in Alabama. They were looking for every opportunity to put in Alabama. They put Alabama ahead of Miami. Alabama is better than Miami, but the record was worse. And this is not Miami of Ohio. This is Miami, Florida. This is ACC, Power Four school. We're going to put Alabama in. They were praying, dying for SMU to win that football game so Alabama could go. And when Clemson were up 24-7 at half, they're like, all right, well, this might get a bit controversial, but, they got their doors blown off by Clemson, who lost to South Carolina, who lost to Louisville. They haven't beaten anyone at SMU. We're going to put in Alabama. And then when SMU started the creep back, tied the game, and they lose on a 60-yard field goal, they had to do it. They had to put them in. But they, trust me, they didn't want to. They wanted Alabama in there. And credit to the committee, Alabama's a better football team. I'm not saying that. They have a better resume. They beat Texas. They beat Georgia. They beat South Carolina. But they beat LSU. But that loss to Oklahoma, this ain't the Brian Bosworth Oklahoma. This is no Baker Mayfield, no Kyler Murray, no Caleb Williams, no Adrian Peterson. This was a pathetic Sooner football team. And you lose. And you didn't just lose. It was embarrassing. 24-3. You didn't score a touchdown. You lost by 3 scores as a double-digit favorite on the road. That's an inexcusable loss. And yet, the committee were lining it up for Alabama to get in. SMU win, and Alabama's in. Or SMU gets blown out, and we put Alabama in. And it was looking like at 24-7 at half, Clemson rolling, Klubnik on fire, we're still going to put in Alabama. We're still going to do it. Then that was a worst case scenario for the committee. They're like, are you kidding? SMU comes back, ties the game, and lose on a walk-off field goal. Not just like a chip shot. It was a 56-yard field goal. Trust me, the committee wanted it. They put Alabama in last week. Woo, if SMU win, oh man, Bama, SEC, more money. But if people wanted to take the sport seriously and the committee seriously, even though they're a lesser team with a lesser resume, they were an 11-1 team in a bonus game, the conference championship, losing on a walk-off field goal in a game where they dominated the second half. They couldn't do it. Even the committee couldn't do it because they have to gain people's respect. If they put in Alabama and they kicked out SMU, they would have lost a lot of respect to a lot of people. To me, the last 2 years, they've made good decisions. I would have put Alabama in over Florida State. Florida State were, at the time, the whole committee said we're taking the 4 best teams. Florida State were not one of the 4 best teams. When Jordan Travis went down and they couldn't, they were had 20 yards worth of offense and they barely beat Louisville, they did not deserve to go. They made the right call picking Alabama. And this year, even though Alabama is a better football team, you can't get over those losses, those embarrassing losses. Oklahoma not scoring a touchdown. You lose to Vanderbilt. At Tennessee, Milroe, costly pick, ends the game. There's too many. Once you get into 3 losses and a loss like they had against Oklahoma, you can't take them. And the fact that SMU played Clemson to the end and they were down and out and came back, they had to take him. And what's crazy to think is if they didn't come back and if they lost by 14 to 21 points, they would have picked Alabama. I just know it. To think we were that close to one of the most pathetic Alabama teams in recent time without Nick Saban making the playoff is crazy. And they were looking for it. They picked them over Miami. They're a better team with Miami. Miami's one of the most overrated teams in the country. They're Cam Ward and offense only. No, they cannot play a lick of defense. Think about it. The committee were that close than putting Alabama. They were an SMU win away from putting Alabama, and they were a Clemson blowout away from putting in Alabama. The one thing that saved SMU's season was coming back in that second half. That saved them. Absolutely saved them. And I'm happy for them. It's been a long road back for SMU. They got the death penalty. They're a pathetic program. They joined the ACC their first year, and they're in the conference championship game and almost win. And guess what? They make the playoff. Now they got to play some football now. You're not playing Duke. I'm not a huge Penn State guy, but they're much better than Duke, much better than Clemson. But think about it. We were that close away from them jamming Alabama in once again. If SMU win, they were in. If Clemson continued to play like they did in the first half, Alabama's in. The one way Alabama didn't make it is the way it unfolded on Saturday. Crazy. And I still thought on Sunday morning, watching it, they're going to put in Alabama. I just had in the back of my mind, they're somehow going to try and put Bama in. And they couldn't do it. So credit to the committee. I think they got it right. Are these the 12 best teams? No, but they have to do that. You have to put Indiana in. You have to put SMU in. Unfortunately, Clemson won the ACC. They have to put them in. Do I think Boise State's one of the 12 best teams? No. But they're one of the 5 best conference champion winners. And hell, they're one of the 3 best based on ranking. So it's not the 12 best teams. We're going on 12 best teams. You'd have South Carolina. You'd have Ole Miss. You'd have Alabama. But it's not. But I still like the format. How many teams are going to put in? We're going to put a 40-team playoff in. They picked, I think, the 6 best teams, and they filled out their conference champions. That's what it came down to. Quick break, and we come back. We're going to talk about what's going on in Kansas City, and is Kirk Cousins done as the Falcons starting quarterback? I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6 ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from John Talon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinéma Public for a lively cinema.
I say, what are you listening to there, old chap? Man, I'm listening to the Live Wire show on CJLO 1690 on your AM dial every Saturday from 9 till 10 in the morning.
Back here on Tommy John Show. So, what a weekend. Forgot to mention the Juan Soto contract at the top. 15 years, $765 million to join the Mets. My son better play baseball, and he better hit like Juan Soto. Unbelievable. I'm surprised he left the Yankees. Apparently, only $5 million difference, but it was one less year on the Mets deal. Anyway, it's a fortune. As a Red Sox fan, I never really believed we were in it. I was like, huh. They say we're in it, but I just don't see it. I always thought it was between the Mets and the Yankees. I'm surprised, based on how close the offers were, he decided to leave and go to the Mets, but hey, who knows? I'm just as a Red Sox fan, I'm just happy he's not with the Yankees anymore. Also, Bill Belichick linked to the North Carolina head coaching job. That should be interesting. I have no idea what's happening with North Carolina. Like, I don't know. Is Bill, I thought he wanted to catch Shula's record. He's so close. The Jacksonville job's going to open. Depending on how the Bengals season goes, maybe that job's open. Dallas. There's going to be a lot of job openings for the NFL in the offseason in a few weeks. And he's going to take the North Carolina job. We'll see. And in college football with NIL, if they get the backing, they buy some good players, you have a very good coach in Bill Belichick, well, one all-time great coach, you can turn it around quickly. And the ACC is not the SEC. Well, you got SMU and Clemson playing in the championship game. So they can turn it around quick. So I like the aggressiveness from UNC. If he gets the offer he wants, he's going. But they're going to offer him, what, $10, $11 million a year probably to get him to not go to the NFL? I don't know. We shall see. Quickly on Kansas City, I cannot believe how they win these games. Like every time I'm watching it live, I know what's going to happen, but I'm still in awe. Like, they were totally outplayed in that second half. And Mahomes, credit to him, huge plays on those third downs. And of course, they have a chip shot field goal, and it has to hit hits the upright square on, and it bounces in their way. There must be some black magic or something. It's crazy. But they're 12-1, but there's still some holes. That offensive line is not that good. They got a good run game with Pacheco and Hunt, but they're not an explosive offense. They're slowly moving down the field. There's a lot of three and outs in that offense. But in the last 2 minutes of the game, you give Mahomes the ball, we all have an idea what's going to happen. They're 12-1. And with the Buffalo loss, they got a really good shot at being the one seed. They still got tough games. They still got Houston. Still think they have Denver again. They have Pittsburgh. So they could lose those games. And if Buffalo wins out, it could happen. But Buffalo's got Detroit coming up. So it's going to be tough. That was a big loss for the Bills, for sure. But we have to talk about Kirk Cousins. That is alarming, that situation. They gave him $100 million guaranteed, four-year deal. Forget the total number. Was it like 180, 140? I forget the exact total of the deal. Whatever it is, it's a problem, and he might be benched. We might be heading to that point. They have Tampa Bay right in front of them. You're on a four-game losing streak. You have the head-to-head. If Tampa Bay loses the game and you win a game, you're quickly in the lead again. And your schedule is awful. Awful. If this is their chance, if the Falcons want to save their season, make the postseason, you got to make the switch. You got to. You got the Raiders, the Giants, the Commanders, and Carolina. If you win out, you should win your division. The Bucks, they got the Chargers coming up at Dallas, Carolina, and New Orleans. They got two. At the Chargers is a tough game. They're going to be underdogs in that game. They lose that game, and you win next week against the woeful Raiders, you're in first place. Michael Penix has proven to be a very good thrower of the football. We all saw that at Washington. Could have won the Heisman Trophy last year, won 14-1. Throws maybe the prettiest deep ball in the draft. I think you got to make the switch. Cousins can't see the field right now. He's no touchdowns, 8-9 picks in his last four games. He is a turnover machine. And with a team with Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Ray McCloud, Drake London, Darnell Mooney, Algier, they're loaded. Good offensive line. You have to make the switch. The Falcons want to save their season. Put in Michael Penix Jr. Just see, what do you got to lose? What do you got to lose? Thank you guys for joining us today on the Tommy John Show. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CGLO 1690 AM. Thank you guys so much, and I will speak to you all next Monday.
CJLO.